Can either team control it long enough to create a big chance? Lavelle flicks it behind. Sophia Smith is in. Sophia Smith! She's done it!
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle here with my co-host Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
Barely alive.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, that penalty shootout. I didn't get home last night from work till 3:30 in the morning.
Lord.
So, and then I had to check in for my flight and just stayed up to do it because I was like, I'm not going to wake up for it. And I leave for San Diego. I'll probably be on the plane by the time that people are listening to this episode. And so we're just really, really short staffed for sleep. I at one point I was not vamosing. But then by the end I was vamosing. And I almost listened to that track on repeat to keep me awake driving home late at night.
It's such a good theme, actually.
It's a banger.
It's kind of dope.
It's a banger.
It is. It is. Yeah, it was wild, and we're absolutely going to talk about it all. But before we do, like we always do, we're going to read a review. We love and appreciate and need y'all to rate and review the podcast. We appreciate that. 5 stars if they are available to you. Drop a review in there, dad joke, please, or it can just be simple. Like from Black Star 4.
Or give Andre a nickname.
Yeah, I was moving on past that. Like from Black Star 4, who dropped a review, short and sweet, titled Found My People. Love that. And then the review reads, this is going to be my favorite podcast real quick. You know what? I like that energy. Short, sweet, love it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Y'all please rate and review the podcast. Make us happy. So, Courtney, what are we going to talk about today? Has anything happened recently?
I mean, we saw the first underwater soccer game ever happen in the history of the world. Or at least in the history of CONCACAF, because I have seen it happen in other parts of the world. But in the history of CONCACAF women's soccer, we saw an underwater game.
We did. We did. We're going to talk about that. And how it went from, like, just ultra dangerous, chaotic to how it ended. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about both of the semifinal matches because there's a lot to talk about with both. And then Orlando Pride decided to drop an absolute bomb before the start of the NWSL season. Barbara Banda is coming over from the...
Yo!
I don't know. But yeah, so we're going to talk about that because that, I mean, honestly, you used to pray for times like this.
Yo. That's all I can say. That's an absolute banger signing.
Yeah, that is wild. And low-key... NWSL starts real fucking soon. So we got a lot to talk about. Anything to add to the list before we get to it?
Nope.
All right, before we get into all the stuff with the US and Canada, because there's a lot to talk about there, there obviously was another semifinal. And I thought it was actually kind of funny because, you know, it was a little sneaky of CONCACAF to be like, oh, these games are going to be played at these times. And then, whoops, never mind. We're going to change U.S.-Canada to be the nightcap for everybody. And I bet you Brazil and Mexico aren't too mad about that, given the pitch. So they had...
I agree.
They had the first run out at San Diego in Snapdragon Stadium, which we need to have a conversation about Snapdragon Stadium and hosting, being a tournament and championship venue. But
you know, hosting nearly any game.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're gonna talk about that. But let's talk about Brazil 3, Mexico 0. First goal, Adriana, 21st minute. It was kind of a mix-up between the goalkeeper and the defense. That was a real bad look. I was like, Mexico, not like this. And then it got worse, 29th minute. It was actually kind of weird because this is a phase of play that happened. We're going to talk about it more in depth, but it was a weird kind of move on from a phase of play. And then the referee halts play. Hand to the ear, to the VAR screen, and then comes back. Red card for Nicolette Hernandez, which I thought was kind of sad because she's been balling out this tournament. Really changed the game. 3 minutes later, Antonia got a goal. And then in the 48th minute, Yasmin put a back heel, a filthy back heel, into the back of the net. And that was it. 3-0. Courtney, Where should, you know what? Let's just do it. Red card talk. I saw you tweet and I saw you were in agreement with this decision. And
it's a red card. Not. You can't art. You can't like that
I'm
from
gonna.
The letter of.
I'm gonna
like. I mean, I know you are going to, but like from a refereeing decision, she was the last player. She was the last defender back. She did not get a touch of the ball and takes the player out. That is a like that is a, such a standard dog so red card. Did it ruin the match? Yes, it yeah. completely changed the nature of the game. Even though, honestly, I will say, even if that red card did not happen, I do think Mexico was a little shaky at the back with Brazil coming yeah. forward.
Brazil
was so, like,
all over them.
That I was also thinking about that, too, of, like, I mean, it like, it sucks, and it 100% took, like, the wind out of the game and some of the excitement out of the game, but to me, that is, like, such a textbook red card. And, like, thinking, and all, but I'm also thinking, like, if... The side, like, if it was, you know, Rafaeli on Ovalle, I just literally named two players, and the same thing happened, and Brazil then did not get a red card as a result, like, I think people would also be up in arms in the same way. Like, even if, like, it would have sucked either way, but, like, to me, that is an such a textbook red card that it's like the ref didn't make the wrong decision from a refereeing standpoint. It was probably just like not a great decision from the vibes of the game standpoint.
I think it was the wrong decision from a refereeing standpoint. And the reason I'm going to say that, the entire reason I'm going to say that is because I think Zanarato initiated the contact and was pushing Hernandez over. And that's the problem is like, if you kind of lay a defender out, obviously they're going to like try and get to the ball still. But I think that contact was initiated and that's a problem for me. So I thought that, it wasn't really Hernandez, just went out with a wild tackle. I did think in real time, I was like, ooh, that's probably going to be a penalty or a really, or it could potentially even be a red card. I didn't know because I didn't have replay at the time. But then here's my other point. From that point on, play just straight up continued. There were multiple sequences that happened. And then all of a sudden, like the ball was at the other end of the pitch and the referee's like, hey, let everybody chill out. We're going to go back several seconds. And take a look at this play. And I think that's the part that made it feel extra frustrating for people, because if it was an in the moment decision where it was like, whoa, I got to make sure I get this one right, then okay, fine. You analyze it. I still think that's harsh. I agree. If she came in with, you know, reckless abandon and took her out, then yeah, that is. But I just think in terms of the contact and how it wasn't solely Hernandez that was sliding in that way in a dangerous way. I thought she was kind of pushed into trying to make that move the way that Zanarato kind of was trying to beat her to the ball. It felt a little too 50-50 to me to change the game in that manner. So I can understand people that say it's like by the book. Yeah, but this is why I hate refereeing by the book.
Well, I actually disagree. I don't think, like, a shoulder-to-shoulder challenge is fine. Like, even if there's contact between the two players, I don't think that necessarily negates the red card at all. However, I will say, and I will say this is 100% a privilege because I was in the studio. And so, like, there's, people don't know this about broadcasting, but there's, like, obviously so much more that meets the eye. So, like, sometimes when you're seeing something on the TV, like, we also have, like, other feeds and like there's just like a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And so there was like actually a very like a to me like a really perfect angle from behind that I don't actually know if they put up on the broadcast. It is in the highlights though, where you do see like there's truly actually not a ton of contact between the players, and then you do see Hernandez come over and that this is a funny thing, right? It's like from that angle you're like, oh, I think she gets the ball, but then from the reverse angle of it, like where you see them, where you see like Hernandez in front of Zanarato, then you're like, oh, she doesn't get ball at all. Which is why I was like, yeah, like to me, this 100% feels like a red card. But it is a really good point that, and I understand people's frustration about this because it is an issue where like, you know, in real time, obviously Hernandez doesn't get the ball, takes out Zanarato, but then because the ball doesn't go out, like there's no kind of natural stopping point for VAR to go look at it. It just has to type it like kind of has to be egregious to a point where, like, VAR is, like, you know, goes down or talks down to the center referee to being like, wait, you need to stop play to, you know, go look at this. So I do agree, like, having, like, obviously not calling in real time, but also the fact that the ball did not go out of play for, like, several minutes or there was no foul or anything like that, that kind of, like, forced a natural stoppage in the game also was, like, that's not a great part of it. But also by that point, I mean, that was, I believe, 25 minutes in, and Brazil was already 1-0 up, and they had already had, like, I think one or two pretty concrete opportunities before that where it was just kind of like a, like, I'm not 100% certain I can say that if Mexico did not get that red card, if Hernandez did not get that red card, that Mexico would have found a way to win that game. So, yeah, I don't know. To me, it was the right decision, and Brazil was already up. But also, I mean, also, maybe, I don't know, maybe Mexico could have responded in a way, but yeah, I just feel like, and I mean, and this is what we hit on our preview of Mexico at times being a little bit shaky in the back, or almost like a little bit, I mean, shaky, but also it's like a, maybe like a nervousness in the back sometimes, thinking about, like, for example, that Paraguay game, where Hernandez did this 2-foot tackle a Paraguay striker to also get another, to cause a penalty. But, yeah. Kind of is what it is. I think Brazil probably would have won the match anyway, but...
Yeah, although I don't want to be so quick to say that. Like, I, yes, the first, you know, 20, 25 minutes looked rough. Brazil in that high press was all over Mexico. Mexico could not get the ball out at all. They had, like, they trying to get the ball to their wingers. I actually think they made an unfortunate lineup decision. I think having Diana Ordonez did not help them too much. They didn't really have an out ball, really, or anybody to kind of carry the ball. I really think that Paleo, especially given the way that she'd been playing, deserved to start. And I think you kind of can shake up that front line a little bit so that you can get players on the ball. I thought Palacios probably should have been central. Maybe you put Paleo out wide. And so I think they had some issues there. And I do think they also just maybe a smidge too attacking in how they did, because Maria Sanchez was kind of a midfield, even though she was pulling wide. It's almost like you still don't have that player who, like, whose job, natural instinct is to, like, stay in midfield and connect play. Sanchez wants to get wide and, like, get on the ball and do things. And it was just tough for, given the way that Brazil was pressing, they didn't really have that player that could, like, foot on the ball, move the ball around in midfield to try to exploit space, find gaps within that press, or even get the ball behind Brazil a little bit, because that's what they needed. And we know if Mexico has chances, they could put, like, I was so looking forward to the Mexico shooters versus Luciana. I really thought that, like, that was going to be Mexico's route. So as long as, like, they stay within a goal or two, they could always put a foot through the ball. Ovalle, Paleo, Maria Sanchez, anybody, like, could have done, Palacios as well. Like, any of them could have actually done it and actually snuck a goal in the same way. Not snuck, but, you know, scored a banger. And that changes the tone of the match. So that's what I was hoping for. And it just sucks that we never, ever, Mexico never really had a chance to implement adjustments. And they never had a chance to really get themselves back in the game because they were down a player.
Well, I also think, though, with that, it wasn't even, like, I just don't really understand why they changed formations.
Yeah.
Like, and it's kind of the type of thing that, like, for example, we saw a team like Puerto Rico just do for this entire tournament, or even El Salvador at times, where they're like, we're going to play how we're always going to play. And if we lose by 4 goals, we lose by 4 goals. But also if we win 2-1, we win 2-1. Where I don't think Mexico necessarily needed to change what they were doing. Like, it's to me, it's a bit of the thing of, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Because I was like, you were obviously, like, even in their 0-0 against Argentina, they were, like, the way they were pressing, the way that they were, you know, causing high turnovers, getting on the ball, creating tons and tons and tons of opportunities. I was like, why? And also, like, not saying they, like, didn't do their homework, but I was like, also, but if you had, like, watched some of even just, like, Brazil's highlights, you knew that also at times they were suspect at the back too. Like, you know, you have, like, crafty dribblers and obviously sharp shooters, but, like, you also have the quality to get at a team like Brazil, just playing the way that you are used to playing, and especially the way that we've seen them playing in this tournament. So I was like, also just like, why are you doing a formation change against this Brazil side that you know can, like, A, you know that their goalkeeper is basically a midfielder. She goes fishing all the time. And the only team to actually score on Brazil was Argentina, specifically it was a sumptuous lofted ball over the top of Luciana. But so that was also a thing for me too, of like, I think that the way that they were set, like they'd originally set up, also just did not suit them in their playing style. And also it was like, it honestly kind of reminded me a little bit of, not in the exact same way of like the U.S. versus Mexico, but the way the U.S. set themselves up, like, was basically the equivalent of like shooting themselves in the foot. And I think that also happened to Mexico. And I feel like also once that opening, like they were shaky before the first goal went in, but also I think the way that first goal went in, where it was, you know, a strike that like got deflected into the air, and then it was kind of everyone unfortunately just kind of decide to turn left instead of turn right, and then Adriana is the first to react and is, you know, gets the ball in the back of the net. Also then just like did not help, I think, how they're approaching the game, where they knew they had things to fix, and then obviously the red card is just kind of a snowball moment. But yeah, I don't think that they had, like, also their approach to this game of almost changing themselves to try to snuff out your opponent instead of playing to your own strengths. And I understand doing that, right? Like, I understand there are times that you're just going to want, like, a plain 4-4-2 and just having 10 players behind the ball and being, you know, stubborn defensively and things like that. But I think it's a bit different when you go against a team that maybe at the time you don't think is your level, but to me, like, at times Mexico and Brazil, in terms of like quality and especially like in their attack, can be on the same level, and you just kind of, you know, basically snuffed out your attackers to try to be maybe more defensively sound, but it also just didn't work in the end either.
It did not. It was frustrating, which is kind of why I wanted, you know, I was a little like, I hope this works. And then, of course, it did not work. And then I was like, okay, well, hopefully they can get adjustments, or they could make it to halftime with the scoreline, you know, not too out of control. I thought he was probably going to have to. The other tough part is, given the extent of the changes and the setup, like you said, you couldn't just like make a sub. Like, you had to change a few things. And so that's another problem, I thought. They didn't give themselves a ton of flexibility in the way that they set up. And how different it was. Like, if it didn't work, what was your plan B? And it didn't feel like they had one, and we're going to have to hold on for an entire half. And when it was going that poorly, even before the red card, that was tough. I do want to talk about the goals and talk about Brazil a little bit, because you talked about Adriana's goal, which was just kind of calamity from Mexico at the back, which was really unfortunate for that to be the first one. But I know you want to shout about Yasmin's back heel.
Yo.
I
literally walked in the studio and I was like, that is a serious footballer.
Yes. And I also want to add that Antonia is a serious footballer as well, because that right there is a center back that just got the ball and decided to just like shift it on to the left, and then just a great curling shot. I love the reverse angle of it too, because at first you're like, ah, maybe the goalkeeper could have reacted sooner. No, that thing curled right around her fingertips. That was a nasty strike, and from distance too. So like, yeah, you got players that are stunting on you like that. I actually think that's the moment where I was like, oh yeah, it's wrapped.
Yeah, for me too. I agree, for me too. When I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, this game's probably done. Just because, like, obviously how Brazil was playing, they were so on the front foot, just kind of wreaking havoc. Really, like, when at that time, like, Mexico's half, like, there were so many times where we saw, for example, Mexico trying to play at the back and, like, sometimes going short, getting pressed, going long. And, I remember seeing, I think it might have been Adriana specifically, like, just literally picking up a pass in the middle of the midfield and being able to then go out and create from there. And it's like, if there is a, I mean, to be fair, it's a lot of Brazilian players, but I was like, if there's like one of like four Brazilians I don't want to immediately give the ball to, like, Adriana is one of those four. And the other three being Dabinha, Caroline, and Ari Borges of like their current crop of players.
Might have to add Yasmeem to that list.
I mean, I might have to add, now you have to add Yasmeem to that list. Yeah. But like before this tournament, of like, here are four players from Brazil that I don't want on the ball ever. It's like, I'm just going to immediately go and list those four. And I mean, yeah, Brazil so like just got the job done and then were able to, you know, rotate players out, like, you know, get players some rest. And then obviously, even though to be fair, it was starting to rain a lot and the field was starting to get soggy towards the end of their game, they also did not have to play a game underwater like the US and Canada did, which basically the winner of the US-Canada match is actually Brazil. Because they played their match early, got the job done relatively early, but they're up 3-0. But yeah, by the 48th minute, and were able to rotate players out and didn't have to basically lose their players to playing 120 minutes in horrendous conditions.
Segway! Canada 2, US 2, extra time, penalties. 3-1, U.S. goes through. Uncle Nair.
I actually don't think it's 3-1. I think it's Alyssa Nair 3.
that's very, one. Very, very true. So we'll get into the goals, the penalty shootout, all of that stuff in just a second. First of all, though, like, this is why sometimes I find it hard to, like, praise federations and entities. Like, I've been a bit too loud, even for my liking. Of like, you know, this is the greatest tournament ever, like peak CONCACAF. Like, one, I just love the fact that we have this tournament, that it's a thing. It's been way too long, and I thought the way that they set it up was great. The chaos of the draw with the clear balls and everything, I was like, yeah, that's just CONCACAF. But sometimes CONCACAF goes too much, and there's too much CONCACAF. And I felt like this match, given the condition of the pitch, and just... And it also seemed like nobody really knew like who was in control, because the referee had that one moment where she picked up the ball and rolled it and it just stopped, and then she picked up again, rolled it, and it just stopped into a puddle.
You were forgetting her doing that and then pointing at it being like, do you see?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, she was like, and then CONCACAF sometime like after the game or right toward the end was like, well, it's up to the referee. And it's like, no, it wasn't. She was clearly talking to somebody like, y'all see this? And whatever. So like, to me, I'm just like thankful that as of right now, we haven't heard that anybody got seriously injured. But what an absolutely foolish and ridiculous and dangerous decision to play in those conditions.
Yeah, two things. One, we saw them squeegee the field at halftime, and I was like, girly pops. If you had these squeegees, which apparently they do in other sports too, they like squeegee the terrain in golf, I don't know, or they squeegee the course. I was like, how do you describe where they play golf? Apparently they will squeegee the green in golf as well if it's like super heavy rain. And when I saw those squeegees at halftime, I was like, why didn't you do this before the game? It was so increasingly clear that the field was flooding. If you were watching any of Paramount Plus's coverage, pre-match coverage, you were like watching warm-ups of these players, you knew that the rain was coming down. Like, I think I saw Vanessa Gilles like wring out her warm-up top before going into the locker room to change for the match. Like, so you knew it was really terrible conditions. Also, like, before the match even kicked off, you saw there were puddles. And also, when the ref was doing what you just mentioned, Andre, that was in the third minute of the game.
Yeah, yes.
And so I'm like, two things could have happened. You could have tried to delay kickoff by, like, 7 or 8 minutes. Try to get some of the squeegees out on the field.
Half hour, 45 minutes. Doesn't matter. You got it.
Yeah, I was like, you could honestly do it. Like, especially, you know, these teams don't take up the true entirety of the pitch when they're doing warm-ups. You could have been proactive about it, of like trying to get some of the water off. Obviously that did not happen. The ref was very clearly like, hello, look at this pitch. It's terrible. The ball could not roll. Like, some of the best defensive, like, honestly, the pitch was low-key the defender of the match. Because the pitch was stopping balls all over the place. Like, I think of Trinity Rodman trying to bounce on a, like, or pounce on a ball and basically just gets stuck in a puddle and Canada's able to easily recover. Even, like, the quality of the, you know, the first goal of Jaden Shaw being able to go in and pounce on it was because of a bad back pass by Vanessa Gilles, which, to be fair, she had done a few minutes beforehand, and I guess maybe just, like, did not course correct or think it maybe wouldn't happen again. And, you know, Gilles has a back pass. It virtually just stops. And then Shaw's the quickest to react and then get, you know, gets the ball around Sheridan. It's a fantastic finish, but like.
You are underrating the terrific holdup play of that puddle. I thought it did a brilliant job stopping the ball perfectly, perfect layoff to Jaden Shaw. It was brilliant.
Maybe the puddles were the player of the match. But yeah, it was like. And the funny thing, and like, I know we tried to break down the game tactically and all this stuff, but like, you can't even do that. Like, it's like, which team responded better to the terrible conditions, which I will say, I will give the U.S. the hat on that. I think it's funny. I said it a few times last night because I was a little bit delirious because I was exhausted. Where like a few people had remarked, like Naomi Girma responded immediately and like immediately was starting to play. Yeah. Like started playing the balls over the top, like recognizing how, you know, how the pitch was, like, the wet, like, you know, trying to be able to see and anticipate puddles, all this stuff, like, no nonsense. And in my brain, I was like, it's because she got that big Stanford brain. Because I just remember once, like, Naomi Girma saying whatever her major was at Stanford, and I was like, oh my god, you could be a rocket scientist. Like, that was, like, the smartest major I've, like, ever heard, and I was like, it's that big? So many times I was like, that big Stanford brain. No, but I thought, like, considering it, especially after, in like seeing how the players were responding to physicality, maybe some unfair calls, lack of calls in that Mexico match, to now where they're just like, we just kind of have to stick together and not let it phase us. I thought that they did really, really well considering. And then on the Canada side, like, it was honestly just kind of unfortunate. I don't think Canada immediately reacted as well. I think they started to, at like the longer the game went on, especially from like a player like Ashley Lawrence. I also want to give a shout to Jade Rose. Like, I thought outside of that one chance where Trinity got blocked by a puddle, Trinity had like she just kind of kept Trinity on lock for the majority of that match. And I mean, I tweeted this, that like this match is an all-time classic, but also should not have happened. Like, fundamentally, like, you had Sam Mewes tweeting it, you had Casey Stoney tweeting it, you had Julie Fout, like, Lauren Julie Fout had, like, three or four tweets about it, like.
Everybody, so many former players were like, no, this is not okay.
Yeah, it's not okay at all, and it's like, and also, when I think about it, I'm like, okay, I understand we're in San Diego. I understand we're in San Diego, and they don't get a lot of rain. However, it has rained before in San Diego. It's not like they've never seen a drop of rain before in life. B, this stadium, isn't like the stadium is like super old either.
Brand new.
But you know, it's not like one of these old stadiums where like maybe they weren't thinking about like drainage and all this stuff. Like these are newer stadiums. And you know, also you know that climate change is real. Like, or well, I would hope that the people who make the stadium think that climate change is real. But like, even on the basis of, hey, you have grass and you want to water it, and sometimes you might accidentally overwater it or something like that, or someone might overwater it, you need to have drainage in there for events like this. And I will say, like, seeing all of the craziness that the Northeast, especially, like, this New Jersey, New York area goes through on a consistent basis, like, it was literally raining cats and dogs for, like, 8 hours yesterday. Like, I've never... There was so much rain that happened yesterday, and I was thinking about, like, Red Bull and those rains and all Gotham's rain delays and all that stuff, and, like, even then, you had never seen the quality of Red Bull kind of succumb to that. And so, like, the quality of the pitch, it's just, like, that was absolutely ridiculous, and there should have been an adult in the room to be like, hey, we shouldn't do this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was like, the main point, and it really ruined it for me in so many ways. I mean, there was so much more that ended up happening in the match, but it was really hard to watch because basically just watching that game in fear, just absolute fear of something horrible happening. And CONCACAF is super fortunate that nothing seems to have. At least I haven't heard anything reported. But I was incredibly, incredibly scared watching that game, particularly the first half. It just like took all of the intrigue and interest of that game completely out for me. And that was like that's like the last thing I really expected. And at some point you expect common sense to prevail, and it just never did. And that's where I'm like, all right, it's fun and cute to be the fun, cute, chaotic Federation, but not and like there has to be a line.
Right.
And I'm scared that this wasn't the line. So to me, like, what the hell is the line then? And so that was really, really disappointing. I do want to talk about the game, but before we go in to do that, I want to mention Naomi Girma's degree. She has a degree, a Bachelor of Arts in Symbolic Systems, which is computational linguistics, and continued to pursue a master's degree in management science and engineering as she was playing professionally. So,
them big brains. Yeah. Them big brains.
Yeah.
She got big brains. I heard her say it one time in a sentence, and I was like, I need you to write that out for me, dog.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit wild. But yeah, in terms of adjusting, this was important for the U.S. You talked about Girma. I thought she was the first one to be like, if I get my foot to a ball, it's going out. Like it is, I'm not playing games. It's going high in the air and it's going out. And so she adjusted quite well. I did hear that apparently Lynn Zoran was really like complaining to the ref a lot during the game. And I even think that they reported it was either Alex Morgan or Alex Morgan who told her like, hey, just like, let's play. Like they're not going to stop it. So stop, which is interesting to me because I was kind of like, Horan was on her Karen energy and like, listen, if you're going to pull out the Karen energy, that's the time to do it. So like, thank you. But unfortunately, they didn't listen. So
wait, I have one thing to say about Lindsey Horan. I'm giggling because it's sucked. Like this moment I'm about to describe sucks. She gets bodied and like falls on the ground. This wasn't the big slide that everyone saw. It was like another time where like, maybe she gets like a slight hip check or something, but like falls on the ground, like falls on her stomach, and you can see, and like doesn't get a foul, and you can see that for a split second she wants to like pound the ground, but then also recognizes that if she does, she's just gonna get water splashed in her face, and stops herself. And I was like, it was one of those things, you know, sometimes like the ball goes out of play or something, they just like show a random replay. They showed a random replay of that, and I was like, that sucks. That's like the to me, that was like one of the perfect encapsulations of like, here's why the player should not be playing in these conditions. I also want to mention, I mentioned the squeegees before. They also did not squeegee the entire pitch. They did like 1/9 of the pitch. And the worst part is when like, you know, when they go from a close up and they go to a wide shot where you can like see a lot more of the field, you can see the squeegee lines and how it's not across the entire field. So I'm also like, y'all did like the bare minimum at halftime too. And to be fair, at halftime, for the folks who were there saw this, where they were like, the ref again was rolling the ball in the field and like seeing how the ball rolled, and by this point the ball was rolling better. But the craziest thing is we had a slightly delayed halftime because the rain ruined the comm system to the referees, which for a moment I was like, they're gonna call the game because the refs can't hear VAR or each other. We'd be remiss without saying that there were two huge VAR calls. Well, sorry, 1.5 huge VAR calls that were missed. The foul on Jesse Fleming, which is 100% a textbook penalty.
Yeah.
Yes. Does Tierna Davidson, technically she touches the ball, but then the ball stops because soggy. And then Jesse Fleming gets a foot on it, and then she follows, and then she steps on Jesse Fleming's foot. Like, the most, and at first we were like, oh, maybe it's not on the line, and then you see a replay, and it's like, that's one of the most textbook penalties I have ever seen in this modern era not get given, which is embarrassing. I'm surprised Canada hasn't been a bit more up in arms about it. I could see the fact that the game went to penalties and they lost in penalties, maybe why they weren't more up in arms about it, because, like, by the time something goes to penalties, it's essentially, like, you were taking your own fate in your hands at that point. And maybe they're not more mad because they, Alyssa and Air went Hulk mode, became a brick wall and saved three of them. But like, that Jesse Fleming foul should have 100% been a penalty.
Yeah, it was real bad. I mean, if the water takes out the comms, and you know, early in the match you saw Trinity Rodman, I think that was in the very first like long ball, she just belly flops and then just completely soaked, and she's like, "Are you serious?" And then Jenna Neiswanger had that where she clears the ball and just it's serious
drowns.
Like slip and slide stuff. Like it was absolutely ridiculous. So. We mentioned the Jaden Shaw goal. That was the first goal of the game, and that goal stood as the winner until Jordan Heidema dunked on Emily Fox in the 82nd minute, and that was real unfortunate.
First time I've ever seen her do that before.
Yeah, that was
a dunking
that was,
of that nature.
That was quite the dunking, and I was very, very like, damn it. Especially not, and it wasn't even like, man, I really want the U.S. women's national team to win. It was like, damn it, we don't need to play anymore on this pitch, and it's going to be extra time, and nobody needs that right now.
I was like, I don't want to stay up anymore.
Yeah, I was just like, this game needs to be over. Like, why did you do that? I get it. I get why you did that, but damn it. So, yeah, that happened, and then it was the end of regulation or end of normal time, and then we went into extra time, and Sophia Smith looks like she scores the game winner, and that celebration,
oh my,
I cannot tell you just how like, this is the weird thing with this match, is that I went from like, I hate this game, this shouldn't be played, I don't give a shit what the fuck happens, to oh my God, look at Sylvia Smith like, and her scoring the goal and getting emotional. And then, oh my God, Alyssa Nair, but we'll get to that later. I want to stay on the Sylvia Smith thing because
she just
needed that so much. And I'm so frustrated that she's already in a space this kind of heavy with the national team due to bullshit that I'm not going to rehash right now. But you could just see it all over her face, all over her expressions, her teammates, everything. It was a lot.
Well, let me give the people, maybe we have new listeners, if you did not start listening to us during the Women's World Cup, welcome. I know I'm saying it in March, like it wasn't almost a full year ago, but it's okay. But for context, we know the U.S. gets knocked out in the round of 16. Sophia Smith unfortunately misses her penalty in the penalty shootout versus Sweden. So she misses it, goes back to club. Can't remember actually if she ended up scoring for the rest of that NWSL season. Maybe she had one or two goals. Oh no, she gets a goal and then she gets injured.
Yeah, she scored like immediately.
Yeah, she scored immediately, but then gets injured. But you know, she hasn't. I think she started one game of this W Gold Cup. This was her first goal of the W Gold Cup, and so she was speaking post match, and it was clear like if you're watching our coverage, you could see like at when the world feed is like cutting between cameras of celebration and stuff, you can see that she's clearly emotional, especially after the match. I will say she also made her penalty in the penalty in this penalty shootout. And so you can tell that she's clearly emotional. And so post-match, she was asked about like, you know, there was a lot of emotions, like just take me through what was going on. And she very specifically mentions, you know, like, you know, I know I missed that penalty of the World Cup. It obviously affected me, you know, mentally, emotionally. It's felt almost, she almost kind of said like it felt like it was something that was kind of hanging over her. So the fact that she got that goal, for the sake of narrative, I kind of wish it was a game winning goal, but you know, she gets the goal, she does make her penalty in the penalty shootout, and obviously it's just a huge release, especially I think at a time, I know we're talking about like play the kids, like these kids are ready, but also these are these kids also that are like then, like, their sights are set on taking a player like Sophia Smith's place. So there's also just more added, there's obviously a lot of added pressure on this program in general because it's the U.S. Women's National Team. But, like, there's also more added pressure, I think, for a player like her to perform, despite the fact that she is also still so young. Like, it's not like she's, like, 28 or 29, 30. Like, she's still in her early 20s. And so there's obviously all this pressure for her to perform, especially also if you think about, you know, maybe she wants to play the nine or something like that. And yes, we know that Mia Fischel tore her ACL, but like going into this tournament, it was kind of a toss up of, you know, who would start, maybe her, maybe me, official. So obviously she's under all this pressure to perform, score goals, all of that. And she doesn't. It's very clear that that's like a huge emotional release for her, which obviously is great. It's also that like the goal is a great goal. Like, how did Roosevelt win that ball in the air for the flick say, on? Give Rose the credit. Like, go Pink Lava. Like, she's...
Canada's center backs are like just about the strongest unit and one of the strongest units in international football. I feel confident.
And dominant in the air. And lethal in the air, yes. Defensively and offensively.
I know that two of them kind of like got in each other's way, but I don't care.
Roosevelt won the header. We're not talking about the other kind of, she won the header over two Canadian center backs. So she goes and she wins that header, and it's a sick flick on to then Sophia Smith, who obviously opens up her hip, curls around Kaylin Sheridan in goal, and like it is obviously such a huge goal for her. For narrative's sake, wish it was the winning goal, but it wasn't. And literally the last kick of the game, unfortunately, Canada's trying to get that last chance. Before this moment, I don't think they were also necessarily being super successful at it. Like, it wasn't like they were, you know, Alyssa Nair was forced into these huge saves or something. It was like they weren't able to either connect in that final pass or something like that, or get like a really, you know, a great shot off. But there's, you know, I believe it's a free kick, ball just over the top. Alyssa Nair misses a ball, punches poor Vanessa Gill
right in the face.
Two fists right to the noggin, right to the face. Poor gal, honestly. Poor gal. I believe she ended up later getting subbed as a concussion sub because she got just two fists to the face. She gets two fists to the face, goes to VAR. It's given as a penalty. I was like, I believe in Alyssa Nair because besides the fact that I believe this, I also previously said on the podcast that Alyssa Nair is my number one goalkeeper. For the U.S. women's national team. But unfortunately, she misses the ball, gives away the penalty. Adriana Leone, they cut to her face. She's taking some deep breaths. Big, deep breaths. Nair guesses the wrong way. Leone very easily slots it into the bottom corner. So we're going to penalties. I groan because, A, y'all know me. I hate penalties. If you don't know, I despise them. I hate them. I just hate penalty shootouts. I'm like, do it any other way. Go to whoever had more corners in the match. Like, I'm like, please, no penalties, because it makes me deeply stress out. But Andre, we get to penalty. And I think before penalty started, Alyssa Nair heard people talking smack. She felt it in her bones that people were talking smack. And so what does she do? She saves. First of all, she saves two penalties back to back, then scores her own, and then saves a third. So, and they're, to be fair, they're all at the same, they're like all in the same spot to her right. It was insane. Like, yes, kudos to her, because saving penalties are hard. And that's why I'm like, that's why you're number one, because you come up and you're like, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I'm going to redeem myself for it and put the team on my back, as she's done before. But also, those penalties were all in the same savable range.
I just want to thank whoever put together Canada's scouting report, because that shouldn't happen. those three penalties in the three spot that are saved, and they weren't even like super, like, it's not even like they picked out corners. They were kind of close to Nair. Now, obviously, it's still difficult to make sure you make the save and all of that. Plus, you know, not to bring up bad memories, but things can happen. Things can happen in terms of goal line technology, and you know, things can happen. But
she saved that penalty, okay?
She saved it. Which is hilarious. Every time I tweet that, the Europeans get so mad.
Yeah, your DMs or your mentions are probably on fire right now.
Oh, it's been a mess. The quote tweets on that tweet and my mentions are just out of control. People are they just lose their minds, and I'm like, if that had happened to anybody else, I feel like it'd be fine. But because it's us, they're just kind of like, and honestly, when I say it, I'm like half joking, half serious, because it's just a funny thing to say. But also it's like, a millimeter. Like, come on. How random is that? Like, of course we're going to talk about that. That's wild.
What if the camera was a little blurry?
Exactly. So yeah, it was out of control. It was absolutely wild. So this brings us to the final Brazil versus the U.S. I am a little bit or a lot of bit shook about this game. I think when you look at kind of the last four teams, I think Canada will probably be frustrated, especially given that game. I think they fought back well, but again, on a non-waterlogged pitch, something that wasn't a pool, it would be interesting to see how they would have matched up against the U.S. I think Mexico within this tournament, even though the way they went out is rough, they can also chalk up that red card at completely changing the game, because it did. And they got their statement win. Brazil has been, in my opinion, the most impressive team of this entire tournament. They've done it without a lot of their regulars, and they've had other players step up. And I think that's been excellent for them. That's exactly like the right use of this tournament. And the U.S. has been interesting, kind of noticing a pattern from Twyla, which, you know, she's not meant to be the head coach. She is an interim coach for a reason. But when she first took over, she basically hit the copy paste on that Sweden 4-2-3-1. And we ran that out for a while in matches. And now that she kind of found a lineup that has worked, and like it worked against Colombia.
Well, or was that change Emma Hayes? And then she was like, maybe I'll just stick with this.
Well, I don't even, honestly, I don't know if it was Emma Hayes, because honestly, some of this stuff does not look familiar to me. just being honest.
Oh, no, sorry. I meant the initial change.
Oh, well, yeah.
And then after that, it was like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm worried about, because it was an unchanged 11 into the Canada game, which, given the way how physical and intense that Colombia match was, asking those players to go back out and start against Canada was a massive ask. Now they have a lot of minutes on their legs. They have a physical battle with Colombia within them. And in the same week, they have this running through inches of water and that this kind of match in their legs as well.
Underwater workout.
Yeah. You can't really do the unchanged 11 thing again. So now what is she going to do? And I'm scared about whatever the hell she's going to do, because I don't believe she can name the same 11 three times in a week. That's not the purpose of this tournament. And it's also would be... wrong to do to these players.
What just popped in my head? Who does she think she is, Serena Wiegman?
exactly.
Where, like, honestly, England, I think, got a little bit lucky of that. Also, yes. Well, to be fair, the Euros is, I feel like that's like a longer tournament in general, to be fair. Like, the Euros is about the same length as the World Cup, and so the players technically have, I think, between each match, have an extra day's rest, too.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, what happens in the Olympics. Yeah, like, Brazil has definitely been I think they've been the most impressive offensively. Actually, we'll say defensively, I think Canada probably took that for me.
Canada ain't playing nobody.
I still think their three center backs are doing very well, and a three back that they've never deployed before.
Were they tested?
I mean, look, Brenda Saran, I will say, was trying to do a little something. It might have just been her, but like, obviously a waterlogged pitch. But, I mean, I don't know, I think they weren't tested, but I actually do think, like, probably on paper, because the U.S. wasn't trying to play Naomi Girma. They probably had the best three at the back. But, anyway, looking at this final, Twyla obviously cannot put out the same 11, because this entire team just had an underwater workout for 120 minutes, or the majority. So, the thing is, I, like, don't know necessarily what to expect out of this team. I'm like, anything can happen. I do think those two back-to-back wins were extremely important for the way, like, just kind of the team's overall growth. Because I will say, it's funny, like, looking, I wish I had the average age of both 11, of this 11 compared to, like, a normal U.S. 11. On the pitch, because, like, I will say, it's like, you know, between a Neiswanger, a Fox, Coffey, Albert, Shaw, and, I mean, kind of Rodman as well, too, but, like, also this squad is, and, I mean, Girma as well, they are technically still young players. Technically, with an 11, you can do that. if they're all really young, I don't recommend doing that. And I also don't think we should, but like, yeah, I don't know. Like, honestly, I have no idea what Twilight's going to do. Well, look, maybe Twilight decides to start, do something crazy and start Casey Murphy in goal and just change up the entire 11.
She might be forced to. And that's this is where I have a couple of thoughts in my head, and we'll wait to do, like, once the tournament is over. I do want to do like a full kind of recap of like the U.S. women's national team and what they got from this tournament, because I do think that, like, mentality wise, like, that conversation is finally done. You can't win a game like the game against Colombia 3-0. Yeah, Carly in the mud.
I said I will, because I've brought it up a few times.
Okay, well, all right. So, like that game, and then the Canada game, which just required a whole lot of concentration and just like overcoming not even obstacle, just absolute, like, a ridiculous situation that should have never happened.
Playing a game at a lake,
Yeah, so like, in terms of their mental capacity and their ability to concentrate on a task and just get a job, like get a result, those questions are answered. Yes, it's CONCACAF W Gold Cup, but those are two very good opponents and in really weird conditions for both of them for different reasons. There's also the question of what did we do that is going to have long-term payoff? Bringing back Alex Morgan as the 9, is that a long-term move? Did we actually do something well there? Lindsey Horan at the 10, is that a long-term move? Is that something that we think is going to have long-term benefits in terms of how that's going to operate in the future? You know, like, I have these question marks. And again, I want to get into it later in another episode, because otherwise this will be 2 hours long. But like, it is going to be interesting, one, to see She Believes, but then also way even before that, you know, this weekend, what the hell is the final going to look like? Because Brazil is going to be fresh and ready. They had a pretty good, quick outing versus Mexico and could make a lot of changes to keep themselves fresh. And they high press with a ton of effort and intensity and in groups. And we are going to have the players in the right tactical setup and system to be able to navigate that. And that hasn't exactly been the plan, right? That hasn't exactly been a game plan that we've needed to rely on in the past two games. So where is it coming from, and is Twilight capable of putting it together? That's what's going to be interesting about this final.
Yeah, I do want to have a conversation about Alex Morgan, and if she's like obviously she's not the long-term solution, because she's like 34. I don't know. I can't lie. I know she's in her 30s off the top of my head. So obviously it's not going to be like, this is our 10-year generational striker at this point in her career. But
she'll be 35 in July.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely think those are conversations we should have, because, I'll save it for the conversation we'll have. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how the U.S. is going to try to adapt to a high press, because I'm trying to think the last time that the U.S. truly coped with, like did well with a high press in the last. When did Vaca take over? 2020? Since then, I, like, can't really think of a time where they've coped well against it. To be fair, they haven't faced it a ton of times, and they fundamentally don't face it a ton of times. They face a ton of low blocks, which,
yeah, that's when you have part.
When you have when you have a player pool as deep as the U.S. is, like, that's just going to suit them, like fundamentally, like, oh, give us the ball, like, yeah, of course not, you know, force us into playing faster and making and, you know, trying to think two steps ahead, etc. So yeah, honestly, I don't know, and I mean, I think for the sake of an interesting game, I would hope that Brazil doesn't do what Mexico just did and try to tweak themselves to, change the way they play to, or formation or whatever, to because they know they're playing the U.S. and maybe want to be a bit more defensive, etc. I hope they don't do that, because I want to see, like, the most interesting game. Like, I want Brazil to come out on the front foot and do fun things, and I don't know, have Crystal Dunn somehow score banger over Luciano. I don't know. I'm just like spitballing fun things that could happen. But yeah, I don't like, I mean, the U.S. is going to have to be forced into a rotation, but also like, I will say for both of these 11s, they are 11s I wasn't like, outside of Naomi Girma, Tierna Davidson, and Lindsey Horan being on the pitch, and because Horan is captain, they're not, like, this also isn't, like, the starting 11 I would have predicted for the U.S. as well. Like, Rose did not start. A player like Crystal Dunn also did not start. So, for example, Sophia Smith not starting as well. Those are all players I think would be in a starting 11. So, honestly, I'm not sure. I have no idea. I have no idea what the U.S. is going to do. But also, I do know if they want serious business, they got to start Casey Krueger, because those Brazilian wingers will eat them up. And you need better one, like, fundamentally better 1v1 defenders. And that's no knock on Fox. That's no knock on Nyswanger. It's just like, we all know that's not their strongest suit. Their strong suits, especially from the outside back position, are going forward. And you're going to need folks who can also get back and be very, very sound defensively.
Yeah, and that's going to be very interesting, because that was, you know, what I expected versus Colombia, to be honest, but that's not the lineup that we got. So might just be forced into it, but it might actually help in this instance. So we will talk about the final once it is over and done with, and kind of recap the tournament from maybe multiple perspectives, not just the U.S. You know, we like to focus on many of the other teams. It's not just the U.S. specific, even though that is the team that we both root for in these competitions, but there's still
sometimes.
Well, I mean, yes,
I root for it. Sometimes I find a root that I don't officially have, which is Brazilian. But
that's the fun part of it all. So yeah, we'll talk about it all. So okay, let's talk NWSL stuff and then get out of here. Courtney, Barbara Banda is coming to the
Rio de Orlando. Look, the Pride are moving. I forgot the joke. I had a joke earlier about,
oh wow,
some with a G and lasagna and moving in silence. That's what the Pride were doing, but I can't remember how to phrase it. But y'all get the gist.
Just put it together in your own head. It's a DIY punchline. Do it.
But yes, getting Barbara Branda is such serious footballing organization actions.
Super business.
That is serious footballing business right there. My word. First of all, she scored two hat-tricks at the Olympics, even when Zambia was losing to the Netherlands. Like, she still found a way. Scored, what, 6 goals in 1 game. I think she did finish. Her and Miedema finished the tournament as the golden boots, both tied on 10. That's a serious footballer, and to be fair, it's like really, really hard to watch. Outside of like huge international tournaments, it's really hard to watch a player like Banda, because previously she was playing in China, which is from honestly a lot of parts in the world, but especially from here in the U.S., those games aren't super accessible or really accessible at all, unless you know how to cleverly get through a VPN and maybe a firewall and something else. But yeah, she is everything that we've seen from her on the international level shows how serious of a footballer she is. And look, we were excited about, there were so many players that we were excited about coming to the league, but this, like, I hope folks know the generational talent she is. She's insane. Like it's, I'm just so excited. That's why I said Orlando is now my second favorite team in the league, because they keep making serious football business, serious footballing decisions. And I'm really, really here for it. And I'm so excited for Barbara Brandon to show up. Like, catch me on flights to Orlando, maybe, because I want to see that all the time and often.
Yeah, I've been trying to be good with my funds, because it is difficult to spend a bunch of money on football shirts and football paraphernalia. But the Pride have so many players who I think I just need one of those. I need to rock the oranges. And Banda is now like top of that list at the moment. And yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to not do it. So this was also, shout out to Orlando, transparency. This is another thing that I'm like, this is going to sound boring, and so I apologize. But I do think that, because especially in this league, We have so many financial restrictions and mechanisms, you know, salary cap and a net transfer threshold and allocation money, all those things. Like, we have all of these things now, and obviously allocation money is going away, but still there are a lot more kind of rules beyond internal team budgets that dictate how you can build a squad. And it's really frustrating when teams are not transparent about money in, money out, those sorts of things, because you have no idea where anybody stands. None whatsoever. And so shout out, and hopefully this is a trend that Orlando also sets, not only bringing in terrific international stars, but also in their press release, they mention the transfer fee. I do believe that is the first time that has happened. $740,000 transfer fee paid to Shanghai Shengli FC. And there's also a sell-on clause. So if they happen to accept money for the transfer of Barbara in a future time, then Shanghai Shengli will also get some of that money. And they also say that allocation money was used in the signing. I don't know how much, so there's still that layer of transparency that we don't have, but at least we've got some explanation right at the top in the first paragraph of the press release. I know that's boring shit to most people, but that it, for people who cover this league, in all phases, it's really important to try to have this information like available. I want more information, such as how much allocation money was used, but still, this is a good step, and I want to praise and encourage progress.
I completely agree, but that's some serious footballing business. My gosh, that's such serious footballing business. I'm so excited.
And it's going
to
be fun as hell.
Like, it's going to be so fun.
Like, I appreciated that they allowed, you know, work to get Masiah Bright to a destination she wanted to be. I think it was a good move for all parties involved, except kind of Orlando at the time. You were like, man, they're not going to have that like target, that player who can just like, and now they got Barbara Banda coming in. So I'm just like, okay.
Sheesh.
Yeah, so they're going to be fun as hell to watch. That ain't, I've said it before. I think I said it last season. It ain't your 2-year-old nephew's Orlando Pride. I don't think this Pride is going to be your 1-year-old nephew's Orlando Pride.
Really? They're cooking.
Yeah, they are going to be a problem, and I'm really excited to watch them, which brings me to, the NWSL is coming back real quick, and I'm like, I thought I had more time to prepare. And I don't.
Just
this time next week, we'll be running into the Challenge Cup. And then next weekend, y'all, opening of the NWSL regular season. It is here.
There's a lot. Literally, basically from the start of the year, it's like as soon as W Gold Cup starts, we're going W Gold Cup, start of the NWSL season, Women's Champions League is coming back, boom, April international break, which means we have the return of the He Doesn't Know What She Believes Cup. And then all of a sudden it's like NWSL is in full swing. All the European seasons and Champions League final, boom,
yep.
Olympics.
Champions League coming. Yeah, it's about to get extremely
chaotic. Like it started on started on February 17th, and it's just really hasn't stopped. The train in fact is just picking up speed.
Yeah, it is. And I'm really excited about this NWSL season for a number of reasons. You know, the signings coming in are going to be fun. We got two new teams coming in. That's going to be interesting and fun. I don't believe the signings are going to stop. I keep hearing a ton of rumors. I don't know how much is actually going to happen or get done before the start of the season, during the season, or especially once the European season is done. Yo, I'm not – the way the NWSL teams are spending, if I was a European club right now, I'd be real shook. I'd be like, can we just like – I know like we got rules against like playing like year-round, but waving bye to these players and then being like, hopefully no NWSL team comes calling and they decide to bounce in the offseason – I think we're going to see a lot of player movement once the European leagues are done, and that's going to be very interesting to see who goes where. But yeah, I'm super hype and ready for it. Courtney and I are going to talk through our plan to preview the NWSL season, try to leave it as late as possible because different things happen, moves happen, all of that stuff. Some teams haven't even announced, Spirit haven't even announced if they've signed some of the rookies that they drafted. So like there's still a lot of player movement to go, and we'll see if we can catch up to it all and drop some previews next week, because it's here.
It's here, but W Gold Cup final first.
Yes, W Gold Cup final first, which is going to be ridiculous. And
Sunday at 8:15?
Sunday at 8:15. I'm a little shook, but it's going to be fun either way.
I too am.
Honestly, if Brazil wins, I'm still going to be happy because they deserve
basically,
it.
Basically, I win it's either way.
Exactly.
This I was is like, how Brazil I win. Wins, I win.
This
wins,
is how we win. All right, Courtney. Anything else to say before we get out of here?
Nope.
All right, then. Over to you for all the right, bye.
It's okay. I was like, I just said nope. Bye.
There we go.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.